we're going to move now to the panel questions. And within that, Jess, are you on?
I'm here.
Okay. So, or since we're running short on time, we'll ask one or two questions apiece, and then we can continue on with a couple of the final wrap-ups. There will be some polling questions that come up. So the first one here is for Jess. Is that while Kuhl has been repealed for meat, is it still in force for fruits? If so, why does it work for fruits and not meat? What role did Packer brand fit into the Kuhl debate?
So great question. It is still in place for fruits. And one of the things that came out of it is you did have, you know, packers and importers didn't like the law. Canadian-Mexican countries didn't like the law. Typically, from their viewpoint, it was how it was implemented, how it was written from a mandatory standpoint in the definition. So so it works for fruits. We think it should work for all products to be able to inform the consumers. And I'm not too sure about the packers and how they played a role in that, you know, that question. You know, certainly they had an interest in how that law would play out, but they also, with their packer labels and whatnot, and there's a lot of promotion around branded labels and branded products, which we think is a good thing, over 100 of them. But again, at the end of the day, there should be a basic information from where that country is, for that, where that product is from.
All right. This question is for Vince. What has been the reception to the shift towards a more crop insurance-like program?
Well, the farm sector has played the following card. They have said, we know direct payments were politically toxic, and they were. The super committee in 2011, in charge of making substantial adjustments to the federal budget, in private told the farm lobby that either they gave up direct payments, or total cuts that had to come forward on farm spending would be equal to $5 billion, not about the $1 billion or less that they were subsequently required to offer. So essentially, a variety of commodity groups came up with the idea, let's argue that we should only have help when we need it. And that's how the corn growers dreamt up the ARC program, and how the peanut and rice and some other peanut growers argued for price loss coverage. And so that was the generation of the two new straight subsidy programs, which are so often described as risk management programs and insurance programs, which are not. Now, the other move has been occurred through the Agricultural Risk Protection Act to very importantly extend subsidies to the harvest price option contract, which is now the contract of choice for those for growers of those commodities for which the contract is available. So that's corn, wheat, and so on. So that contract is available for something like 80% of the book of business that RMA has. Now, that action was not a Farm Bill action. That was ARPA was an independent of the Farm Bill process initiative, although all of the ARPA provisions pretty much are now wrapped into and have become part of the 2014 Farm Bill.
All right. Thank you. And one another question here for Jess. And there has been a few events concerning federal grazing lands, i.e. the recent event in Nevada and Oregon. Is there any congressional inquiries or hearings affecting federal grazing?
Sue, there's been a bit of interest on that, and I don't have that information handy. I know the House and some of the subcommittees have spent some time reviewing that, and then there's been several letters of inquiries and then direct members talking with the agencies and whatnot. So, again, I can't speak to exactly the hearings. I don't have that familiar information with me. But what I'll say in kind of a greater context is we need to have that dialogue needs to be continued with the agencies that manage those lands, with the folks, the livestock producers, and Congress. So I think this past few years has shown there needs to be more discussions. And what I'll always say, and we go back to, which is why I'm bullish on these conservation programs and things we've pulled together, and we show the good acts of players involved, and you know, even kind of show a little bit more of what from both sides what's needed to make it all work out. So that's where we're at on that.
All right, thanks. One last question, then we're going to move on, and this is to Vince. And this is, excuse me, there have been some news reports of reducing the crop insurance payments made to agents. What is the status of this, and do you think it's a workable change?
Well, two comments. I think what's being talked about is the proposal to reduce by $300 million a year payments to the insurance industry through the insurance companies that was in the early November Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act, the Bipartisan Budget Act. That $300 million would probably mainly have come out of compensation to agents. But as Eric Belasco and I pointed out at the time, agents are selling the same number of policies and covering roughly the same level of acreages as they were in 2005 when, in inflation-adjusted terms, they were willing to do, the industry was willing for them to do that work with roughly $1 billion to $1.25 billion less for the total sector. Almost surely taking $300 million out of the $2.7 billion the industry is currently getting to deliver $6 billion of subsidy. So that's roughly 40 cents per dollar going to the farmers. Taking $300 million out of that would have absolutely zero impact on the availability of crop insurance to the farmers. Compensation for agents would drop. Some agents would leave the business. The expansion in agent numbers has been so substantial over the last 10 years. We have more agents running around chasing farmers now than you would believe. It's sort of like the old story. The USDA has 100,000 employees, and that's one employee for every two major producers of agricultural commodities of the 200,000 farms that produce roughly 70% of total output. We're not quite at that point, but we seem to be getting to that point with insurance agents because the business has been so lucrative over the last 9 or 10 years. There's a very interesting paper on this, readily accessible to anyone, that came out through the Environmental Working Group by Bruce Babcock at Iowa State.
All right, thank you very much. And
you're welcome.
I would like to thank all of the presenters and all the great presentations that they had. We'll move on now to, as I mentioned prior, this has been a series of workshops or webinars going on. And as you can see, the next ones we're going to have is May 5th. We're going to be talking about local foods. And then on May 10th, we're going to be talking about the state of the ag economy. So I look mark your calendars for those two events, and we hope you join us for those. We also look at what to like to hear from you about the topics and presentations you would like to see offered in the future besides the ones that I just mentioned. You can either send us an inquiry in the chat pad over on the left-hand part of the screen, as we mentioned before, or you can send an email directly to information@farmmanagement.org, and we will receive that question and your comments there as well. You can receive more information, as we mentioned earlier, recordings, other information is available at the Ag and Certain Times website, which will provide additional instructions on how to access in just a minute. If you're interested in copies of today's presentation, they are also available to download, as well as we've done over 100 of these webinars and presentations since we started this in 2009, and all those are recording and available for download for your use. So the file sharing, what we provide now is there's been a number of references listed and mentioned in today's presentations, along with email addresses throughout the webinar. In order to provide a single point of reference for all the information, we have compiled this and a PDF which is made to download in your pod right now. So you just simply click on that and hit the Save to My Computer, and it will download that for you. Let me again close by extending our thanks to these speakers, the first-class presentations on the U.S. cattle producers in 2016, the Food Safety Modernization Act, an update, and then the 2014 Farm Bill, a midterm review. I would also, again, like to thank all your participants today in today's webinar conference, and we sincerely hope to find you at the next one, as we mentioned there earlier. Hope to see you again in one of the upcoming presentations. Until then, we offer sincerest hope of success and meeting the challenges of today's and uncertain times. And for the Ag in Certain Times team, I'm Trent Tiggerstrom, and for everybody in behind the scenes, again, we thank you for your participation in this. Thanks.